Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories and meeting the people behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air, bringing the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by interviewing some of the most interesting women in the world of food. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. Today, I'm super, super psyched to have Jenny Britton Bauer of Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream and the author of the newly released Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream Desserts here with me. And then in the second segment, I'll be talking to Charlotte Druckman, who's one of the most prolific food writers out there, not to mention one of my own personal food world gurus. But Jenny, let's start with you. Hi.
Hey.
I'm so happy that you're here. This is great.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Seeing that your latest book just came out, which we're looking at, it's right in front of me. It's beautiful. I've been following lots of your press, and you're on quite a book tour, and it sounds like you've been asked a billion questions about ice cream. So I was thinking today I'd like to ask you some questions about the business of making ice cream. And for listeners who aren't familiar with your brand, I'm not sure if there are any of those out there, but there might be some. Just a little bit of information about your company. You're a nationally distributed ice cream brand. You have 16 brick-and-mortar shops all around the country. Your newest one just opened in Charleston. Your second book just came out. Your first was a New York Times bestseller. It also won a James Beard Award. You have two kids. I think that kind of sums it up. Those are the stats.
We're busy.
Yeah. So is there any typical day in the life, or does that not exist for you?
No, I don't think it exists. I mean, I think I wake up ready to attack.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part, I mean, that's fun. I like getting stuff. Yeah. I like being a high output person, you know, going through open doors and trying to make connections and moving.
Yeah. And what time do you wake up? What time does your day start?
Usually 5:45, although now it's summer, so it's a little different for me. Now that I don't have to get my kids ready before school and get them off to the bus stop before seven, you know, or whatever, that changes.
That helps.
It helps a lot.
So your business, do you run the business with anyone?
Yeah. Yes. I run the business with a whole bunch of people. Yeah. My partner, John Lowe, I mean, our business partner and an amazing person. He's our CEO. Mm-hmm. Rock star. And he always calls us the two-headed monsters. You know, I mean, we work so well together.
Yeah.
And we're so similar, but also exact opposite talent. And so that's just perfect. So I think of myself as chief creative officer, you know, and he's the CEO.
That's awesome.
It's great. And then
it's
we have just
find that balance.
An amazing team all over the whole company. And I'll have my small team where we do all of the ice cream recipes, all of the, like I told you before, we're like writing copy to this morning for holiday, and do all of our creative in-house too.
Yeah,
so that's my team.
Jenny was saying earlier, right before we went on air, that during all this promotion for your book, your company is still running at full force. So everything is still
and I still have a job to do back home. And so we're heavy in holiday right now. I'm literally doing copywriting for our holiday stuff, and we've already developed the flavors before I left.
It's amazing. I saw online you have your Father's Day flavors out for this weekend.
Yeah, the moonshine
too, which are
with
really,
corn syrup custard. Moonshine and corn syrup custard are two outlaws of the food world. So, you know, I sort of like to remind people that
give
we're
them
not.
To the dads.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Ice cream makes a great gift. So you call yourself the chief creative officer of the company. Would you say you spend more time developing new things like flavors, stores, books, or maintaining things you've already established, or is it a mix of both?
Both. I mean, I do think about how we can be better every day. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's the only thing I really care about. But that applies to new things, of course, how we make something new to the world, give that to the world. But also everything we already have, how to make that better every day. And so, you know, whatever it is, even if we've been making it for 15 years, I look for the defects and try to make that better all the time.
I always think it's a great thing to keep in mind. Just, I mean, I'm a consumer of products of your ice cream, for example. So I think, just as a consumer, when I walk into a store and I buy a pint of, you know, whatever flavor, maybe I'm trying to, like, the goat cheese and the berry one, like I think it's just the same every time, and it comes out of like some machine somewhere, and it's like, and it's always the same, and it's always delicious. But these are like handmade products, and there's always going to be variables, and even if you're making the same flavor, you have to put in the same effort each time you make it. So it's good to keep in mind on the
And to be a company that constantly moves forward and tries to make something better, you know, instead of just having developed a product, you know, 10 years ago, and then we're out marketing it, you know, but to think about it as a living, breathing organism that can get better is all part of that.
And tell me a little bit about your management style. But first, how big is your company? How many people are you managing?
I think we're about 400 people now. Yeah, and that's including major, a lot of people, you know, people who work in our stores, lots of people who are more summer workers in the stores, and then all the way up to our, you know, we just finally got somebody in HR, which we're really excited about.
That's big. Yeah.
We have a good management staff too, and we have 150 people who work just in my kitchen.
That's amazing.
Which is incredible. So, you know, you think about the output of a modern ice cream facility. I mean, it might take 6 people to do the same amount of ice cream that we do by pushing a few buttons and connecting a few hoses or whatever. But we're making all of the things from scratch in our kitchen, and it takes 150 people. We have an ice cream kitchen with 150 people in it, and a bakery kitchen with 25 people who work in there just making cookies, hand piping all of those cookies that we make and everything.
And for you, I want to know more about what informs that decision, because as your company gets bigger and bigger, I feel like the sense I get is you manage to do a lot of things like a small company would. And the thing that is in my mind is that all of your pints are, you still hand label all of them. Is that right?
We just stopped.
You just stopped.
We were just like, you know what? I think we can give this up.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. You know, what's important is what's inside the pint.
Yeah.
Because we actually had like 25 people sitting around for 8 hours a day writing pints. And we were like, you know what? It's not a good job. It's
just
not fair.
That was someone's job. Or
that was like 25
people.
People's job.
Yeah.
And it's not a good job. And it just, you know, at some point we just decided that there are many reasons for us to give that up, and we did just recently. But, you know, we still print them all in-house, which is hilarious. So we can do like 5 different ones for each one. We can change them whenever we want. We print them to order in our kitchen. So
there's
it's not like it's totally hands-off.
So every factor of what goes into and around the pint happens in-house, which is sort of amazing. And you're not outsourcing, you know, technically you can run an ice cream company and not actually ever make ice cream
or even see the ice cream.
Yeah. So that is not the case with you guys whatsoever. But back to, so you have all these employees, these are the kinds of things that you guys are making in your day-to-day life. What would you describe as the sort of atmosphere of the company? How would you describe the feeling of, if I were to walk into the, you know, the factory today?
Totally scrappy. It looks like we could be in Manhattan, you know, where we have cement floors and, it's not beautiful, but it's, like shiny, you know, everything is sparkling, but nothing is perfect. Nothing's been planned. There's no, you know, grass roof with goats on it or whatever. And what, I mean, it's, you know, it's, you know, we own the company. So we, you know, we haven't spent money on making a glorious, you know, all glass facility or whatever. But to me, that's just absolutely beautiful. You know, that we have stations, you know, everybody has stations. It's a small, you know, it's probably where we make ice cream. It's probably a total of 5,000 square feet, and we have different rooms. So we have like the ice cream making room. The stations are pretty small, as it would be in a restaurant. I mean, it's very much like a restaurant. You know, we have the station where the fruit comes in, for instance, and then all gets washed and hauled, the strawberries, for instance, and then it moves into, you know, the chocolate pureeing station or whatever. We have the kettles, you know, we have ovens in our kitchen, and they're all just like stations where people work, and they're around, and each one of them has like a whiteboard of what they're doing that day. And, you know, we have the pint packing room, and then we have big freezers, and we have a whole fulfillment team who takes inventory and makes sure everything is stored where it needs to be stored and all of that. But it's pretty efficient, but it's packed. It really looks like a restaurant, like at high noon, you know, with lots of people in there, and it's cold in there. We keep it at 55 degrees, our production facility. And so people wear, sweatshirts under lab coats.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me when I went to college on the Upper West Side, and there's a big Fairway grocery store. And my favorite part about going there was the cold room where you put on like your Fairway jacket. And you walk
yes.
through.
Yeah.
That must be maybe what it feels like to work for you.
Right. Well, you know, they're moving fast, so they don't get too cold, thankfully.
Yeah.
But,
Tell me a little bit about your, I think this is amazing, your company-wide meals. You have them, is it once a month?
Yeah, company lunch.
When did you start doing them?
In the very beginning. Back when we first started in 2002, I used to just have it around my table. And make a big, huge plate of pasta and put it in the middle of the table and let everybody take some. And we would talk about who, the company we want to be. And it was, you know, five of us sitting around. And it's just never stopped. It's always gone. And now we have, you know, 150 to 200 people who show up. In fact, we have one just coming up next month or next week. And what happens there is that we exchange ideas. We learn about each other. We learn about what the challenges are in what somebody else is doing in the company. And sometimes we exchange ideas. Like last year, we ended up realizing that we had so many musicians in our kitchen, in our world, that we ended up making an album. We wrote songs.
No way.
It's an amazing album.
Is that
it's
available
called,
for
It's available
for purchase?
In a bunch of places. Yeah, okay. It's called Flavors from Earth. So our whole holiday thing last year was like, if we were going to put a box of ice creams together and send it into outer space, with the idea that we were going to make friends, what would we say about Earth right now? And it, you know,
so
and it's actually, so the music is sort of atmospheric a little bit. It's just, and it's also kind of down home and cool and, it's just great. So
That's
we wrote
so cool.
three songs. I mean, I say we, I didn't have much to do with it. We had these great people, songwriters from Nashville, you know, great people on the album. It's a fantastic album. And then we did 8 Miles High, a cover of the Bird Song, which is really fantastic. And we pressed the album. We actually
That's
made an album. And,
amazing.
Yeah, you can actually get the vinyl copy too.
And how amazing for, you know, for everyone who works with you and for you to work in an ice cream company that would support a project like that. I think that speaks.
Yeah,
to
a lot
of
these people will never
ethos.
Be on another album. You know, they might play. I mean, we had, I don't know, 20 musicians that were a part of it, you know, piano all the way up, you know, and violin and of course guitar and drums
so
and all that.
Cool.
And then we mixed it all there and everything. Yeah, it's really
That's
neat.
Great.
And I am addicted to the music that they created.
And this all came out of
company lunch. It was just sitting around eating together.
Yeah, when I found out, I don't know where I first read it, but I know you've mentioned it a few times. I just think it's such a wonderful tradition that it's great to know you've done it since the beginning and you've gone from serving five people to, you know, about 200 now. Who makes the meals? Like next week when
so
it
So we do. I mean, we obviously do, but it's a lot of times my team. I have two test chefs who work in the test kitchen. And then a couple of people, we'll pluck a couple of people from the kitchen to come in and help. And then we just try to feed everybody. So a lot of times it's just, you know, things we can make in large portions. But, you know, we always do like some vegan, some not. And, you know, we try to accommodate everybody's diets too.
Yeah.
So it's quite an operation and try to make it very fancy.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, yeah.
It's just, neat. It's sort of a running theme on the show. And I think when you talk to anyone who works in any part of the food business or anyone who eats food, you know, I think the importance of people sitting around a table is like huge. Mm-hmm. And I think there's always a lot of excitement in finding new ways to do it. And I think when you can do it in a company, especially one that's growing and moving so quickly, and if you're taking that time to all of you sit down and pause, I mean, that's amazing.
And to learn about challenges, I mean, it keeps us
albums.
Connected. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very Midwestern thing to do too, to gather and eat.
Mm-hmm. And what's been your favorite lunch? Is that a hard question?
My favorite lunch. In my new book, actually, I give out this recipe, but our waffle recipe that we've done forever. It's actually based on the Fanny Farmer recipe from 1896.
The yeasted one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
We used to do that in our North Market shop when we first opened. And actually, my favorite lunch was when we just made a million of those waffles and served this amazing ham and Gruyere and folded them and ate them out of paper.
That
it can be that simple all the way up to, you know, very high-end things. I mean, we did Amy Thielen's book, actually. We cooked out of her book. A couple months ago, and that was really cool.
That sounds so good. I don't know if you've been to Bouvette recently or if
no.
you know about it. It's a little tiny restaurant on Grove Street in the West Village, and Jody Williams, who runs it, she was on the show, and she's a friend, and I helped her with her cookbook, which came out this April. She serves a delicious, it's a buttermilk waffle with ham, Gruyere, fried egg, maple
oh
syrup.
My goodness.
It's like, I mean, you could go afterwards if you don't want to stay for pizza.
Perfect.
Well, Jenny, I could speak to you about ice cream and the business of ice cream all day, but we're sadly a little bit out of time. So we're going to go into our Cherry Bomb rapid fire Q&A, which are the quick, fun questions we ask every guest. So no
okay.
pressure. Number one, sweet or salty?
You're going to salty because salty for me is dessert.
Yeah.
Put it that
so
way.
Funny. It's like you live in Australia and your winters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number two, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had, over medium eggs and toast.
If I were to look into your refrigerator at home right now, what might I be surprised to find?
You would be let's see, what would you be surprised to find? Oh gosh. You'd be surprised to find, I mean, I have a starter that I have in there for that somebody brought me from San Francisco that I've been nurturing and I had to put it away and that's in there. Not much right now, I think.
You're on the road.
Vegan hot dogs. Yeah. You know, that's kind of hilarious. My kids eat those.
What's your go-to snack?
Sriracha peas.
Mm.
It's also a great antidote to eating too much sweet, which I do sometimes. And then you have to go get those. It's like the antidote pill.
What's your favorite time of day?
3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon with champagne.
That sounds great. And lastly, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
Spaghetti and meatballs. Mm.
Spaghetti has been like a go-to answer. Mm-hmm. I want to start doing like a chart. That's great.
Yeah.
Jenny, I can't begin to tell you how thrilling it is to get a chance to talk to you. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back with Charlotte Druckmann.
I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
And welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. We were just speaking with the incomparable Jenny Britton Bauer, and now we're turning the microphone over to Charlotte Druckmann. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Little known fun fact that we were just talking about that I can't resist saying, Charlotte and I went to the same summer camp, so we have to give a shout out to Camp Pinecliff.
Yes, dear Camp Pinecliff.
We were saying if we run out of things to talk about, we might start singing, but I'll try to save you all from that. So Charlotte, I'm eventually going to get to your book, Skirt Steak, but first I want to let listeners know a little bit more about you. How would you describe yourself? Do you call yourself a food writer?
It took me a really long time, and I'm still sort of figuring it out, to call myself. I guess I think of myself as a journalist. I think of myself as a writer who focuses on food, and I find that saying food writer tends to be the easiest way to get that across. But I have a lot of ideas, and I find the best way to get them out is by writing. So I think maybe that's why I don't always identify as a writer. I think about, you know, as sort of an ideator with an outlet that happens to be typing words rather quickly.
I feel like ideator could be your business card. That would be great.
Ideator.
Did you study writing?
I grew up in New York City, and I went to a prep school that had a pretty rigorous English department, and similarly I was an English major in college, and I was always writing. I was that nerd who was the co-editor-in-chief of my high school paper, always. I interned at a lot of magazines, but then I took a detour and went to grad school for art history. So my background in a weird way is possibly more theory and criticism based, with a lot of writing, but I never went to journalism mm-hmm. school.
And how did you go from being an art history student and scholar to writing about food?
Well, before I went to grad school, I had always wanted to work in magazines, always. And I was one of those precocious, and it was entirely because of nepotism. And growing up in New York City, my first, you know, job, my internship at a publication was at New York Magazine when I was in high school, which is really rare, and it was because I had a family member who worked there. But I started doing internships like that at a relatively young age. And once you start, it sort of feeds on itself.
If it opens, it's going to lead to another.
Even before the art history thing happened, which was sort of me having some reactionary response to being an advertising copywriter after I graduated college and just thinking I wanted to do something completely academic that combined theory and writing, but also a visual element. And I was like, I'm going to be a professor. I got my master's, I got accepted to the doctoral program. And I was just like, you know, this is great, but I feel really disengaged from pop culture and real life. And if I had to pick, because sadly, we live in a world where you tend to have to pick sort of, you know, intellectual versus pop culture, academic versus pop culture, I would choose pop culture again and again and again. And that's why I went back to working in magazines. My first paid gig was back in the day at Daily Candy when it was still tiny. Mm-hmm. Then went to...
May it rest in peace.
Yes, R.I.P., really. And then I went to Town and Country, and then I went to Food and Wine, where I covered everything but food. I did entertaining and design. And then I was at the Oprah magazine for a hot minute in a job I really didn't like, and I quit to be freelance. And that was when I thought, maybe now I could write about food. I really like food. I've been writing about all these things that seemed challenging to me. Food seemed so normal that I hadn't really contemplated it. And as soon as I started, I was like, this is it for me. I love this. So that's...
And it comes through in both your writing and just knowing you in person. I mean, you're clearly into it.
I'm enthusiastic.
Yeah. And speaking of, I don't know if this is the right word, but speaking of nepotism, the pleasure of meeting your parents. I know your father in particular is very passionate about finding and enjoying great food.
Yes.
Did that have any influence on your
career? Definitely. I mean, it's funny now, we have this curmudgeonly, or I'm the curmudgeon relationship, where he wants to go to everything new as soon as it opens. I mean, he's like, there, I'm getting reports, he's ingratiating himself on the staff, like, and I'll be like, I can't believe you went there, Dad. Or I'll be like, go a few more times, and then if you still really like it,
so
maybe
he's
I'll
your,
go.
Like, junior reporter.
Yeah, he's my man on the street. I'm like, go get the scuttlebutt, Dad, tell me how the scrambled eggs were, and then, you know, but certainly, I mean, both my parents, because my mom's a great cook, and they're both, they have so much curiosity and so much energy, and they really love New York City. I mean, they love taking advantage of every single thing that's happening in New York City at all times, and I grew up around that, so I think the food was probably the thing that brought us together, all of us, and that we just totally got cuckoo about. But I think more important, I mean, if we're talking about just parenting and kids, I think more important is just planting that seed of curiosity and also giving you that freedom to know that if you feel like doing something, you literally just walk out the door and you go do it.
I mean, that's so empowering.
And yeah.
I think that's true to a lot of us who grew up in New York, where, I mean, when New York is your backyard, it's, you know, your options are huge. I want to talk a little bit about your book. And so for anyone who's listening, who doesn't already own it, Charlotte wrote the very, very wonderful book, Skirt Steak, Women Chefs on Standing the Heat and Staying in the Kitchen, which came out, I guess, just about 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
You interviewed 73 female chefs in the book. And just for a little context, this was well before Cherry Bomb started. And it was before the infamous article that appeared in Time called The Gods of Food last November, which sort of hugely left women out of the question, which has been discussed on and on. So without sort of particularly talking about that article, I just wanted to ask you, as who I consider the sort of go-to expert on female chefs, what would you say, where's the temperature? Has it changed since your book came out? What's your sort of current state on the union, if you have one?
I feel, I mean, first of all, after you write a book like that and people want you to keep talking about it, you're kind of like, what else could I say that I haven't already said?
Yeah.
You know, part of me is happy that we're looking at it and talking about it. But what I don't like is that I think it's become trendy to talk about the fact that women have been left out and this sort of like girl power thing that's happening. I mean, Carrie and I talked about Cherry Bomb a long time ago, and I was so excited about it, and I'm so glad that it exists, because I think it's much more about presenting talented people who happen to be women to the world, as opposed to saying we're all about like, yeah, yay, girls. You know, everyone now is doing when they have a conference now. There's a women's chefs panel. It's on trend, and that's dangerous to me. As soon as something becomes trendy, I think it loses all of its significance, and you really gloss over sort of how you're going to institutionally change things. My biggest complaint in all of this, and it goes back to the trend thing, and it really goes to the question of why we don't hear about people in general. It's just that I would like, and I say this about myself, I would like us, the media, I'd like us to be better journalists and editors. I would like us all to go out and try and write about people and ideas that we don't know about. I don't need now to read any more articles about where are the women. I don't need every time there is a God of Foods thing for the same three female chefs to be asked to speak out, because what happens is it just tells the world there are only three women chefs. I'm glad that we're paying attention to it. I would rather we all look at all of the things that don't get talked about and go out and find those. And to go back to my corny parents, be curious. Don't be lazy. Mm-hmm. Be curious.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really easy to pick up and write about things other people are writing about. You sort of hit on my next question, but what do you feel is our responsibility, even just you and me as people who write about food? What's our responsibility in this situation?
I think our responsibility, again, it's just to always ask the question that isn't being asked. It's to, when everyone else is looking in one direction, it's to look in the other direction. And it's just to go and out and remember that there's a thrill in the discovery, you know, and see if we can go discover things. I honestly, at this point, having written that book and sort of being like, okay, now I'm ready to move on. Mm-hmm. If you presented a challenge to 20 really great food writers and said, just go find someone I've never heard of before. If they all came back and found white men, but I'd never heard of any of them before, I would still be happier with the current state of things. And I'm 100% serious about that. Because I think that spirit would then end up expanding into other people finding other people. And so I guess I'm talking about a sense of diversity in a much broader broader way.
I think it's great. I think it's an important point. So you, speaking of discovery, and you are very, how do you describe yourself as easily sort of excited? Yeah. What are you excited about right now? What's your latest discovery? I feel like you're always finding the best bites of people.
Gabriella Gershenson and I took it upon ourselves to do a pastry column for Eater New York, because we feel, both of us, that pastry is very and unfairly represented. It's underrepresented as an art. It's underrepresented as, you know, a craft that has a history, and it's underrepresented for those of us who are obsessed and think constantly about nothing but ice cream and cookies and cake and croissants. So that has been really a joy, just because we are forced to go discover things and we take turns. So I'll pick a place and introduce Gabriella to it, or a place I haven't been either, and say, this sounds cool to me. And she'll introduce me to a place. So we just did the donut plant, which is turning 20 this year. And
is it really?
Yeah, wow. I'm not a donut person. Like, I kind of thought donuts were just unnecessary. And I went in with an open mind, and I have to say I was really impressed by Donut Plant. So that's, you know, that's one of those, I mean, no, it's not new, but to me it was to be able to talk to Mark and really hear how caring he is about his donuts. Like, am I going out to get donuts anytime soon? No. But if I was,
you'd go there.
Yeah.
Well, it's also great to hear about someone who's been in the business for 20 years and who still feels like, I didn't realize it had been around that long, and it still feels sort of new and fresh to me. And I think that in and of itself is a great accomplishment and is worth noting, especially when it's so tempting to talk about all the new, I mean, there's a billion new donuts and there's cronuts.
And every time, again, you know, you go back to that, every time there's a roundup, no one wants to put Donut Plant in it because it's 20 years old. So then you miss if he's doing new things at Donut Plant. So the other thing that I'm doing that's sort of similar, that I'm always having like 10 ideas at once. But Melanie Dunay, the photographer, and I have started doing it. Just honestly, these things come from a selfish place. This is me being like, how do I eat more sweets? Or how do I make it so I have dinner with my friend Melanie like every other week? We're doing a thing for tea, the moment for the blog, on Sunday night dinners in New York City. And restaurants that are sort of regular type places that people actually go to dinner on Sunday night. So this also entails our going back to some places that I grew up, like you and I probably grew up going to, and seeing what it's like to walk in there on a Sunday night. It's like family night. Yeah. It's like old home week.
It's so great that you're sort of, as a writer with, you know, a byline that people are going to read, it's great that you're spending time giving attention to people who, you know, might not be the new shiny thing, but are still holding really strong. And I
yeah.
think that's awesome.
Where it becomes new yeah. in some weird way. Yeah.
I could talk to you about food and sweets in New York for days, but we are sadly just about out of time. So I'm going to do the quickest cherry bomb rapid fire. I'm just going to ask you two questions.
Okay.
Okay. Number one, what did you have for breakfast today?
Toast and jam.
Perfect. And number two, my favorite question, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
My usual was JG Mellon, hamburger, medium rare, no roll, sauteed onions, cottage fries, well done, extra crispy.
That sounds like heaven. I think I might need to go there tonight. Charlotte, thank you so much for being here. It's always so fun to see you. For listeners who want to follow you, your Twitter handle, is that the best thing
yes,
to find you on?
Yes.
Which is?
It's at Set Drux, like the French article set, CETTEDRUCKS.
And Jenny Britton Bauer, who we were talking to earlier, she resides online at Jenny's, JENIS.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Tune in next Wednesday at 2 o'clock on Heritage for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.